All right, for those of you who are listening on the podcast, we are just about to go live on YouTube with this special edition of Squared Circle News. And this is actually three nights in a row now that you've seen me. And I do have a different co-host each night, but I'm just copying the link. I'm going to go ahead and send it out to the world. And we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Squared Circle News. I am here. I am Vinny. I am here with Tony from, as long as I get it correct, Petty Prattle. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. Well, Tony, welcome to Squared Circle News. How are you tonight?
I am very well, thank you. I'm sorry I missed the last one, but I'm so excited I made this one. I'm excited to talk about, you know, all things wrestling with you and some other soaps as well. So,
well, that's good. No, I'm glad. I'm glad to have you here. Before we go ahead and get on with the show, so to speak, I do have to get a little bit of church announcements out of the way. As always, we are officially an affiliate for WWE Shop, which is a Fanatics experience. So go to studsandsquarecircle.com/wrestlingmerch. We do get a commission off of whatever you buy off there, which could be one of these awesome Paul Heyman Hall of Fame originator of Extreme t-shirts that was sold in Philadelphia. I'm sure they're on the website as well, or an NWO hat, or anything else that's on the site. Like I said, go over to studsandsquaredcircle.com/wrestlingmerch. Outside of that, do want to thank everybody for tuning in for last night's Dockside at the Bay, as well as the Monday night Suds News. We did break a lot of news going forward in regards to the Sudsy Awards coming up in July. And we did read off the category list as well. But, you know, we are here to talk about WWE and WWE Draft. But before we even get into the draft, Tony, I do want to ask you, first off, how did you get into wrestling? You are on mute.
Sorry about that. I've been watching wrestling for so many years. We're not going to talk about when I started, but we'll say some of my first memories are brightly colored wrestlers flying around the ring, such as, you know, the Ultimate Warrior, yep, and one of my personal all-time faves, Macho Man Randy Savage. I just remember these, you know, larger than life figures being like larger than life and just throwing each other around the ring. I remember the Ric Flairs and the Bam Bam Bigelows, and, you know, my grandmother was from the South versus I spent some time in the North as well. So like things were slightly more regional back then. It was shortly after the WWE kind of started to connect all the dots, and then WCW did as well. But like, I just remember larger than life characters and personalities, and, you know, it felt normal to me to watch that. And I just, ever since, I've been off and on, you know, some eras are not for me, and then sometimes life be lifin'. That's my catchphrase. Sometimes life be lifin', and, you know, certain entertainment circles just can't keep my attention at those times. But I've been watching off and on for, we'll say, more than a decade, so I don't age myself appropriately.
I don't.
Although I think I've already done so.
But yeah, no, I'm kind of the same way, where, you know, there's a lull in the fandom, just, you know, life gets in the way, or even if it, you're just not that into the story, you know, it is what it is. Like, I know WWE went through a lull in like the late 2000s, similar to, you know, they went through that awesome boom period of the Attitude Era during the Monday Night Wars, the Ruthless Aggression Era, you know, right after they won the war and they were firing on all cylinders, but then they kind of got into a lull. And I understand completely, you know, it's like I didn't watch every day, you know, kept up with it. But what is it that kind of reinvigorates the fandom? It's when you find out they're doing something great with a great story. And then like now, you know, it's at the level where it's almost must see TV. And ever since the Bloodline story got so big, it's gotten to the point where WWE is firing on all cylinders.
Absolutely. I think WWE is most successful when they remember that character-driven story and character in general is what makes them work.
Yes.
When they don't get too far down, bogged down in, you know, people claiming that it's not real and blah, 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 and try to be too serious. Like when they take themselves too seriously, that's usually when they jump the shark.
Yes.
And so I feel like they're remembering who they are. And so that's why we're kind of in this renaissance.
Yeah.
They're letting their performers play and they're reminding their performers that that's what they're here to do. I mean, as much as they are here for an art form, they're also here to play and to get the audience excited, which can we just talk for like 2 seconds about how the absolute best fandom in the world may be that Leon French
Yes.
fandom? Because like I have never seen a crowd like that in all my years of watching wrestling, and they were like electric. Doesn't even feel like it fits, and it's still like the best word I can come up for how incredible they were. But
Oh,
okay, I
absolutely.
digress.
Well, no, you're right on that. And what I've actually noticed is whenever WWE does the show, the PLEs abroad, whether it's France or Puerto Rico last year for Backlash, or even Saudi Arabia, no matter how controversial it is for them to go over there, the fandom that's over in other countries are they blow the US away. And even last year with AEW running Wembley Stadium, you know, the fandom is at its all-time high simply because of the fact that they don't get the big WWE, the big US-based national brands out there all the time live. So they're going to come out in force.
I think it's one of those things where being smarky has kind of killed some of people's like true love for the fandom. And a lot of the fans go into business for themselves. And when they do that, it becomes more about them and less about the show. And when you go overseas, they know they got one shot at this and they're going to appreciate it and enjoy it and live in the moment as much as they can for as long as it lasts. And they're not going to waste a second of it. Also, I think that we should, like, WWE should be really focusing on the fact that going to these like soccer cities is brilliant.
Yes.
Because these soccer cities know how to fandom.
Yeah.
I mean, it can be dangerous because some soccer cities are a little bit
Yeah.
less reasonable than others, but it can be incredible too, like in France.
Yep. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And not to mention, you can easily, we saw it in Australia, you could fill a soccer stadium in these international for lack of a better term, territories, these international markets, and that's where all the, you know, the people are coming from all over the country to be there. I think the United States fans have, besides the smarkiness, I think it's also where we're spoiled because theoretically WWE is coming to our towns twice a year. So, you know, I know last night or Monday night, Raw was in Hartford, and I actually totally forgot about it, which is, you know, 20 minutes from where I live. So it's, you know, and the people were quiet because it is, you know, it's at the XL Center twice or three times a year, whether it's Raw or SmackDown, and it gets spoiled. So when they say that they're doing the, you know, the PLEs, you know, Backlash in France, and we have Clash of the Castle in Cardiff again, coming up, and then there's going to be the Bash in Berlin in Germany. Those fans are going to be absolutely rabid for the product, and it makes the overall presentation better.
I've had this argument with a friend of mine before who's like, oh, great crowds, you know, are necessary for, you know, wrestling. And I'm like, to me, it's either going to detract or enhance.
Right.
I feel like if the product is good, the product is good, but a good crowd can make it great.
Yes.
Or, you know, or it can make something mediocre good. It can elevate. But that the problem is a bad crowd can make something seem less than what it is. So like if you watch the same match on mute as with the crowd involved, you'll get two very different feels. And for me, because I don't like to say it like this because people take it as me like taking shots and being shady, which is probably why I should have been a heel in whatever
it's
lifestyle
easier to make
that
people
I
hate you than to love you.
Yeah, I mean, it's very, I'm an entertaining heel, we'll say that. But no, I'm a nice person, I think, maybe, kind of, whatever. Anyway,
I think so.
People do have a follower habit.
Yep.
Where they want to be a part of the crowd. They want to be individuals, but they also want to be individuals with somebody else.
Right.
Which, you know, unfortunately for me, I don't need that. If I like it, I like it. Well, fortunately for me, I should say. If I like it, I like it. So what the crowd is doing, if it works with the match and the story and it like builds on that, then I'm following the crowd. But if the crowd is not giving what it's supposed to have gave, so to speak, then guess what? I don't care.
Yeah.
It gave me what I needed. So yeah. I don't care what you thought of it. Because I got my life. Sucks to be you. Like you paid all that money and you didn't even get to enjoy the greatness that I just witnessed from home.
Well, yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And you know, it's funny you said, you know, the witnessing the greatness that you did at home. I went, you know, I was lucky enough to go to WrestleMania this year in Philadelphia. I went to 6 wrestling shows in 5 days. Thursday night, I went to a show that was associated with WrestleCon. It was at the 2300 Arena, formerly ECW Arena, which I had to, as a wrestling fan, I had to get there at least once in my life. Then I went to SmackDown with the Hall of Fame, NXT, WrestleMania Night 1, WrestleMania Night 2, and Monday Night Raw. Put myself broke, but it was a bucket list item for me. What I'm trying to get at, though, is if I were to do a WrestleMania trip again, yes, I will go to Raw, I will go to SmackDown, I will go to, you know, probably the Hall of Fame was the highlight of the weekend for me. Because, first of all, Paul Heyman's speech was probably the greatest Hall of Fame speech ever. But the other thing is, when it comes to WrestleMania, if I'm going to actually go, I'm going to want to get seats on the floor so that I could see and feel what's going on. Being in the upper deck of a football stadium, you really can't feel the emotion because literally you're paying to watch it on a big screen. That's really what it is. Yes, you have the atmosphere. You're there in person with 72,000 other people. That's fantastic. But you know, when you're watching it on TV and you're getting the commentary behind it, you're getting the storytelling, in my opinion, I would go to a watch party in the city with legends or whatever before going actually to Mania again, if that was going to happen.
Okay. I mean, the thing about me is I've never been live. Sometimes can be a bit agoraphobic. So I'm not big on the big heavy crowds. It feels like they're like closing in on me sometimes. And part of me, one of my goals, one of my bucket lists, like you said, is to go to a big event, like WrestleMania or something. But I don't know. I can't imagine being in such a big crowd and just having to watch on screen. That does seem kind of like it could take you out of the moment, you know, rather than being right there and being able to see what they're doing with your own eyes. But, you know, the energy of the crowd also offers something. So I can only imagine what that's like.
It is. It's fantastic. And a lot of things were actually, I don't want to say negative about the experience, but there was a lot going against the experience Being in the Northeast in early April, the temperature outside was like 50 degrees with a wind chill of like 45 degrees on night one. So that took a lot out of the crowd because everybody bundled up because it was really chilly out. And then I was up on the upper deck. I was up on the, you know, up on the upper deck. So, you know, you're sitting. I posted a picture on my Twix account of how far back I was, and you could see the ring, and you could see them fighting in the ring. But you're going to get a better view, obviously, watching the big screen. And I'm afraid of heights, so being up in the second tier, you know, that was also drawing on my personal fear of, oh, what happens? God forbid something happened. I had a panic attack at the end of night one. And I don't think I've shared this before, but you know what? I will. At the end of night one, I had a slight panic attack because I couldn't find the escalator going down. So being afraid of heights, I felt like I was stuck up there, and it's irrational, I know, but that's the fear that I had. So it did take a little bit away from it. Night two was better because, you know, I was
A
there.
little
And
warmer.
so what was that?
A little warmer for
A
one.
little warmer, yes. And I also brought my earbuds with me so that I could stream the show on Peacock on my phone, listen to the commentary while I'm watching it. So it did make it a little better for me. But there's nothing like it when you have a really energetic crowd. And I was at some of the crowds during the Attitude Era when it was coming to New Haven. And those were fantastic. They did the episode where they put Steve Austin up on the Undertaker symbol. And I was there in the crowd for that. And anytime
Oh, wow.
during the Attitude Era, the crowd was electric.
I mean, it used to look and sound it from home, but I'm a military brat. So I moved around and but one at one point I did live with my grandparents up in the Philadelphia area. So when you said that it was chilly, I was like, up flashbacks, because nobody else in the rest of the country except a Northeasterner is gonna say that 45-degree wind chill is chilly. But no, I could only imagine. And when people were, you know, complaining about the crowds, I was like, did you not hear every time that they said that it was like 50 degrees? Like, give them a bit of a break, because they're kind of ice cubes. They're probably clapping in their head, but they just can't move. Leave them alone.
And you know, some of us were wearing gloves too, so it's like you couldn't, it muffles the claps even more. But as we know now, WrestleMania 41 is going to be out in Las Vegas April 19th and 20th of 2025, Easter weekend. So that could interfere with some people's planning because it is a holiday. But it's going to be a lot warmer out in Allegiant Stadium than it is, you know, than it would be in Philadelphia. But all right, so now that we kind of got some of that stuff and you know just how you grew up into the you know liking wrestling and coming up, and let's kind of delve into the one thing that I really like about WWE now is ever since Kevin Dunn left in you know in December, which was kind of the last person left from the Vince era. And you know he left, and Lee Fitting was brought on as the new you know director, new technical director, and he's wanted to do a more of a sports-based presentation. So the presentation, while it was awesome before, it's gotten even better. A lot of the long
Absolutely.
shots following guys from the curtain out to the arena through the crowd, fantastic.
I think that it's really breathed a new fresh air into the product. It feels more exciting. It feels more like even when you are at home, that you can fully be immersed in what's going on. Some of those like transitions have been absolutely stunning. Like the one where they had Jey Uso walk to the back, find Sami Zayn, both of them look up at the sky. Sami Zayn explain, you know, what that particular location meant to him, and then follow him back in. that was absolutely gorgeous.
Yes.
And a brilliant, really, because like who would have thought? And then some of these new video packages and setup, because WWE has always been brilliant at video packages,
Yes.
but
Yeah.
like they've some of the different artworks that they've come up with have been really, really pretty. I just feel like they're taking New Era very seriously in some areas, like especially from an artistic standpoint. And I feel like they have not had a miss yet. And so I'm really enjoying it.
I am too. I am really enjoying what's going on. But the one thing that is getting some negative publicity, so to speak, is what happened last weekend, the WWE draft. And I mean, obviously they've done this in the past. The original one was in 2003 or 2002 when they've had the original brand split. And when they had a hard brand split, yeah, the draft kind of made sense. However, now it's almost like, let's just kind of go over some of the top few picks. And this is from
Well, I just want to say
okay.
something about what you said with the it not necessarily making sense. I'm of two minds on that now. One, I feel like because they are going to such disparate, networks now, like before it was just, Fox versus USA. Now it's like Netflix versus USA and also the CW on top of it. So like with such broad differences in the companies that are going to be working, it makes sense to try and make that hard line a little bit more solid. However, the choices that they made towards making that for the next year, but I'm kind of on the fence with as well. So like I kind of get where you're coming from on I get the idea on both of them. I'm just not sure
And
how
I
I
do too.
feel about it.
And I do too. And by the way, while you brought it up, with Raw moving to Netflix January 2025, they did announce tonight that WWE and NBC Universal have come to an agreement to keep Raw on USA through December 2024, December 31st, 2024, before Raw goes over to Netflix. So there will be no stoppage of Monday Night Raw. It'll just continue on USA until the end of the year, when they actually go to Netflix. And that alone, for those 3 months, October, November, December, that was a $25 million deal. So Raw is not going to be ending or moving to Peacock or whatever they were thinking. So it'll stay on USA until December 31st, 2024. Which is good news. And I completely agree with you. Now that Raw is moving over to Netflix, it's going to be a much different product. We kind of saw a preview and a move away from the quote unquote PG era, during the lead up to WrestleMania with The Rock. I mean, The Rock was, The Rock was swearing almost every other word. Like, there was no PG about that. But it was a breath of fresh air. It's like wrestling is kind of a subject or an entertainment commodity that's very it's got a very thin line, because on one hand you think about it, and a lot of families are like, oh yeah, it's family entertainment, it's supposed to be for the kids. But on the other hand, it's like when the people get older, like, wrestling evolved with the Attitude Era, and it was not made for kids at that point. And then they went back to PG because they went to publicly owned, publicly traded. Now you're right. They're going to have completely different products: one on over the air with NXT on the CW, one on cable with SmackDown USA, and now there's this whole other realm of Raw on Netflix. They don't have to worry about that many regulations. They don't have to worry about, bleeping out the curses, or what have you. Now, do I think they're gonna necessarily go over the push the envelope to the point it can't be pushed anymore, just because? Probably not. But they're gonna do a lot more in terms of edgier product on Netflix, I feel.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not going to go full Attitude Era.
Right.
I don't think the current climate would allow it to go full Attitude Era or even full Ruthless Aggression.
Yeah.
But because it's Netflix and because it is a movie TV show place, and that movie TV show place does have some blood and it does have some gore and it does have some romantic entanglements, we'll say.
Yeah.
You know, I do believe that they are going to be pushing the envelope a lot more. And I feel like The Rock's final boss character was kind of that first glimpse into the directions that they may go, you know, with a little more cursing and a little bit more blood and a little bit more edginess, and where that particular product will likely lead. And I think what people need to remember is wrestling is as much a soap as anything like General Hospital or Days or, Young and the Restless or what have you. There's still that wild storylines. There's still these, massive suspensions of disbelief. There's still going to be episodic television that's been going on for decades. It's still very much a soap. It's just like a combat soap.
Yeah.
Like they've added in the ballet of wrestling to their soap. And that, so instead of, people thinking they're too mature to slap each other, oh, they're going to slap each other.
Yeah.
The expectation is that they slap each other. More than slap each other, they're also going to shove their elbow down your throat.
Yes.
And their foot. And whatever other body part they can, abuse you with.
Right.
But they have a certain ballet to it so that they don't injure each other unnecessarily.
Right.
And that's basically the biggest difference. And when people remember that it's a soap opera and not UFC or boxing or what have you, I think that's when they're able to really lock in and just have fun with it.
Yes. No, I completely agree with you. And I think that's, definitely something, the way that it's going. And I'm glad you brought up the fact of, wrestling being basically a combat soap. I love that terminology. I'm going to start using that from now on. But because I always call, I always got to the sports opera. That's what I always called it. But either way, the fact is, wrestling and soap operas have a lot in common. You just went through all of the different, all of the similarities and the traits that make them so. And if you look at, where we are, I made the comment last night on Dockside the Bay, where the Bay itself is basically the ECW of the soap world, because they're able to push the envelope in their platform because they are completely streaming, where ECW was pushing the envelope back in the late 90s at the ECW arena because they were on late at night. They weren't getting sponsors because they were paying for TV time on whatever regional network would have them. So, the same way that ECW shook things up and caused the WWE and to a lesser degree WCW to change their formula, I think the Bay is going to force the traditional soaps to change their formula at some point. Now granted, it's going to be a little different because obviously with GH, Y&R and Bold and Beautiful still on terrestrial television, Days on Peacock, and they haven't really gone to push the envelope too much, even though they are on a streamer.
I would disagree a little bit.
Okay.
I feel like Days has pushed the envelope, but they haven't done it consistently.
Okay.
When they've taken a few moments to let you know this is a streamer now, like there's been some slightly gratuitous semi-nudity and things of that nature that have happened that let me know that they do realize they're a streamer, so they do know they can push. They just haven't really pushed
right.
or done so consistently. But yes, okay, that was my only little pushback. Carry on.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I got into this conversation on Dockside the Bay with Kim, my co-host, regarding Days, because I would have thought that now that Days is on the streamer, and the same, just like you said, there are ways that have pushed the envelope. they haven't gone to the point where it's like, oh, we have all these handcuffs off, you know, we can do XYZ. We could swear just because we could swear. You know, they haven't done that because they don't want to alienate their current fan base. But also Peacock has a lot more, which kind of pisses me off at times, watching like WWE on Peacock, where you know, the blood is, you know, shown in black and white, or, you know, the curses are bleeped out, or they cut out an entire Roddy Piper promo from WrestleMania 5. And, you know, they're still censoring stuff on Peacock, even though it's a streamer. So that does, as a, you know, person that doesn't believe in censorship, that does piss me off a little bit. But at the same time, you know, now we're moving into a new territory with Netflix. So
I
we
think
go on.
I was going to say, I think it's because the tier of paid television they are. Because Peacock has an unpaid level and then it has a slightly paid level, and they're a lot less, expensive in that sense than something like Netflix. So because of that, there's a little bit more of a broader family audience that comes to Peacock. So I feel like they don't have like that barrier to pushing the limit. Whereas with Netflix, you're paying to play, which means anything that they want to give you, you've paid for. You are someone who can afford to pay for whatever entertainment you want to see, and you're not going to be held back by, if you don't want to see it, you're just not going to watch it. But, you're adult enough to be able to afford to watch whatever you want to watch, is kind of, I think, how that Netflix model is a little bit more. So I think that little separation is going to be where the difference lies with something like Peacock versus with Peacock. It's almost like it's still a network, because of the connections that it has to the networks. Whereas Netflix is just Netflix.
Makes sense. Yeah, that totally makes sense. All right. So let me ask you, what was your opinion of the 2024 WWE draft?
I was underwhelmed. I was, they made some choices that I didn't expect. I kind of enjoyed it, but there were some moments where I was like, well, why did you do that? And how is that gonna look for the next year and or like 9 months or so that is left in the year? Like there were some things that they did that didn't make sense. I didn't feel like they were building set new or fresh brand identities. I feel like you are going into these transitions. SmackDown is building towards a transition to USA. So I figured that when they did the draft, they would be building an identity that would be going into that new USA identity, or like building something unique for themselves going into that transition. And the same way, I felt like USA was going to be doing something similar on their brand to kind of make their identity special and unique going towards that transition into Netflix. But I don't feel like there was much that was done with thought to the transitions that'll happen in December. I don't feel like they took that into consideration at all, to be honest. And I also don't know that they really separated themselves and made it make sense. It felt like Fox took the pick of the litter like it usually does. And then Raw just picked some names. And I don't necessarily know where any of it's going. And I don't feel like any of the shows that have come since have like explained it to me either. Some of the, like I said, some of the stuff I was fine with. Others of it, I was like, okay, you had a chance to make a fresh choice here, and you're sticking with this. Like in the women's division, I was particularly confused by a lot of the choices. That's my bread and butter. I like wrestling as a whole, but I'm a women's girly. Not just because I am a woman, but because I feel character-wise, sometimes the women are smarter about the business and creating that individual character, like fully fledged. Like
Yeah.
sometimes they're not, you know, they forget what this, they don't get what they need to be doing with their character, and neither do the writers, so they kind of have that issue there with some of them. But as a whole, I feel like the women tend to be smarter about it. They're like, okay, I have to create a character. I have to have a look. I have to have a, you know, a reason why I am the way I am. I have to have this whole thing thought out. And they really like sink into it and make it something that's fun to follow. Whereas the men sometimes can take themselves a little too seriously and think that they're just men fighting because they're men. And I'm like, eh, womp womp.
Right. No, and I understand that. And one name that comes to mind is Chelsea Green, who has done a phenomenal
Yes.
job with her character work. Just,
She's won me over.
yeah, absolutely, she has.
I was like, I did not know where they were going with this Karen character she was creating. I was very annoyed. But then I started to get like Ms. annoyed versus like go away heat annoyed.
Yeah.
Like Ms. has been one of my favorite wrestlers for since he debuted, basically.
Yeah.
Because he is a heel, a real heel,
Oh,
not a
absolutely. Yeah.
popular heel. He can just genuinely piss you off sometimes. And I love that about him. I'm
Yep.
like, sometimes I just need to be annoyed with someone and want to see them get hit in the face.
Yes.
And he is capable of doing that. And she is doing that a lot for the women. And another one that I've been following for a long time, Bianca Belair.
Yeah.
She commits to her character and she
Yes.
makes it make sense no matter what they throw at her. And I'm a character girly growing up on soaps and even wrestling from the era that I came from.
Yes.
So you give me a good character and I'm going to follow you through a lot of things.
And I love what they did by putting Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill together. And
Oh.
I just, first of all, Jade Cargill has a ton of potential. I feel like
Oh.
AEW just threw her out there because she looked good. And you know, she's strong, she has a presence about her, but never actually taught her how to wrestle. WWE, you know, she signed with WWE, she bypassed NXT completely, but she's been working her ass off, training at the Performance Center. You know, she came into the Royal Rumble, she's had a couple of appearances after that, and you know, the idea or the rumor was that she couldn't remember spots. So naturally, you put her in there with somebody who can call a match, and you go ahead and you put her in there with somebody like a Bianca Belair, who has been at the top of her game for the past 2 or 3 years, if not longer, and she can show her the ropes. They can work together. She's getting a push. You know, have Bianca do most of the work, hot tag to, you know, Jade Cargill, have her come in, squash the opponent, 1, 2, 3. And you know, that's the story of the match. And then when they eventually do break up, because most good tag teams do break up and they have a feud, by that point, Jade will be seasoned enough that they'll have the feud. Bianca could lead her through the matches, and then she'll be money.
Yeah, I feel like the big three in general is really smart, you
Yeah.
know, because I feel like Naomi is so seasoned. So even the places where Bianca wouldn't necessarily know how to guide her, they have Naomi there to help as well. And
Yes.
I feel like that little trio is so good because Naomi's being that like really seasoned vet. She's always been entertaining and exciting and interesting. She's also understands character and how to portray it in and out of the ring. And, you know, she's always been kind of a leader in any locker room she enters, someone that people respect and want to be around and learn from. So I feel like that's one a really good person to put around Jade. And then you have Bianca, who is the current up and coming and the number one dream match for Jade,
Yes.
because they are the two, outside of Rhea Ripley, they're the two most China-esque
Right.
characters of the current generation. So when everyone thinks of who they want to see, you know, they want to see those two women go head to head. So putting them together and building a friendship is also building a story.
Yes.
They get to learn each other. working off of each other, they also get to learn each other's weaknesses. So when the time comes to pull the trigger and have them go against each other, they'll already understand how each other works so intimately. Yeah. The weakness of AEW for newbies is there is no road for them to run.
Right.
And without the road, there's not that the continuous, you know, muscle memory being built. There's not the understanding of, you know, working a ring. They don't have a performance center. They don't have the road. They just have their, you know, shows and then the PLEs.
Right.
And that is a weakness for a newbie, because a newbie has to get that muscle memory in. They've got to get used to hitting the ropes hard. They've got used to hitting the mat hard. They've got to get used to not being scared to do certain things and trusting their partner and, you know, taking risks and what have you. And that's not something she ever got over there. None of the newbie girls ever get that. The only ones who have survived, actually the only newbie, fresh newbie that survived AEW is Jade. And it's just because of her natural athleticism and her natural charisma.
Yes.
Other than that, the other ones had to hit the road and go into the indies and get themselves more seasoned and then try to make their way back up. And
you watch it,
that's a sad, not much. I'm mostly on Twitter.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm a women's fan and I'm not a fan of how they run their division. However, they have been piquing my interest in a few areas.
Okay.
But like, that's the thing that I've always noticed as their weakest area that could be their strength.
Yeah.
We've seen on multiple occasions where women have broken through in ways even the men couldn't do. Like the way they had something with Britt Baker at one point, the way they had something with Jade Cargill at some point, what they're getting together with Toni Storm at this point. I just feel like they keep, the women keep showing what they're capable of building. You know, having Mercedes Moné there, they keep showing what they're capable of building, and AEW keeps treating them like a sideshow. And that was one of my greatest fears when they started talking about wanting to be like WCW, because WCW was quick to turn the women's division into a sideshow.
Yes.
To try and build up the men and keep your eyes, you know, interested long enough for them to put another man in front of you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I need you to remember these are actual women's wrestlers. They are important and they could potentially be more popular than some of your men and really, you know, build you an audience if you take them seriously. But it's almost like they take them seriously long enough to get the audience's attention. And then they try to pull back on them so they can push a man in front of you. And I'm like,
they do that with a lot of talent, is they'll push them so far. And it's been a running joke that whenever somebody new comes over from WWE, whether it's Adam Copeland or Miro or, you know, anybody else that makes a big splash, you know, coming over from WWE, they'll be booked to the moon for a month to 6 weeks. And then after that, they're just another person in the pile. You know, Miro's been injured, so he hasn't been on TV. But prior to that, like, they had him come out and he was with Kip Sabian for a little while and was kind of floundering in the best man gimmick. Then when he started coming out with, you know, the whole My Redeemer gimmick and then turning on God for whatever reason it was, and just, he was building up his character. He was getting big. And, you know, because Miro himself, he got over Rusev Day. You know, he turned himself into a baby face. And, you know, going over to there, he knows how to get himself over. But, and the fans were behind it, but it just, it went nowhere. Like, and I'll be honest, I don't watch AEW. The AEW news I get is from Twix, and I get it from, you know, when I listen to Jim Cornette's podcast. Or, you know, so that's where I get all my AEW information. And, you know, here and there from, you know, the Conrad Thompson podcast or whatever. But ultimately,
I tend to be a casual too.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit more in depth than the average casual, but I tend to be more of a casual. you know, I don't want to have to work for it that hard. But I do, I have a lot of friends who are very heavy into like the independent circuit or AEW, or they watch both shows because they have faves on both shows.
Yeah.
And what it was explained to me is that while WWE fully leans into being a combat soap, AEW wants to still be treated like serious wrestling.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, to a degree, that is smart. You want to differentiate yourself and have your own brand, but you are still a combat soap. And even a soap opera that takes itself too seriously for too long loses a lot of its excitement. Look at Young and the Restless.
Yep.
Young and the Restless is one of the all-time greatest soaps, in my opinion, because, I mean, not for everything they've done, but as a overall legacy, they're one of the all-time greatest soaps. And when they're at their best, it's when they remember, yes, you can take yourself seriously here and there, but there has to be soapiness. There's got to be messiness. There needs to be a story. You need to take them on a ride, you know, even if you're doing it from a more serious perspective than some of the other soaps. Like, you don't have to be passions to be a great soap.
Right.
And I feel like when they remember that, they do great things, like with the Jordan storyline.
Yes.
But when they start taking themselves too seriously, that's when they lose people consistently. AEW could be like the Y&R to WWE's passions if they wanted to. You know, one is just high drama and crazy and look at here, look at there, look everywhere. And the other one's a little bit more serious and a little bit more focused on the topic at hand here. You know, the people, the grittiness and what have you. And they could have that balance if they wanted to. And they're choosing not to because they want to be treated more seriously. And I think that that's causing them to shit the bed a little bit. Excuse my language.
No, no worry about language here. But yeah, no, I agree with you. I think it's a detriment to them because when they first came out, they wanted to have that sports-based presentation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is great. And you want to be, like Eric Bischoff says, you can either be better than, less than, more than, less than, or different than. And, you know, they came out, they wanted to be different. They wanted to be the alternative to WWE. Right.
Mm-hmm.
WWE has been a monopoly for 20 plus years, you know? So when it comes down to, you know, another national product that has the funding behind it, you know, look at the roster, Chris Jericho. I mean, I put a tweet out when the original press conference was, I said, Chris Jericho is to wrestling now and what's going to bring wrestling into the future the way that Hulk Hogan helped wrestling in the 80s. Because of the simple fact that Jericho is an established name, you know, and casual wrestling fans don't pay attention to Ring of Honor. They didn't pay attention to New Japan. So theoretically, other than Jericho and Sting, there's nobody in AEW that anybody really knew of. Yeah, you hear about Cody Rhodes, I should say. He was also there. But the Young Bucks, unless you knew them as Generation Me and TNA, or actually followed them in the indies and, you know, an All In and, you know, Ring of Honor or the, you know, New Japan, they were largely unknown in the U.S. for casual fans, you know, especially if you were more WWE-based. I'll admit, I don't pay attention to much other wrestling other than WWE because that's what I like. That's what I've grown up with. Sure, I gave AEW a chance, but I didn't. I'm not a huge flip flop and fly person. I prefer psychology.
Mm-hmm.
Why something is happening. You know, one of the worst matches at WrestleMania this past year was Jimmy and Jey Uso. And I'm sorry, but the psychology wasn't really there. Like,
yeah, it was a bit of a super kickoff.
Yeah, exactly. And believe me, that those super kicks and, you know, have become one of the most overused moves ever in wrestling, the super kick and the spear. But there was really no psychology. It was a super kick fest. It was a spot fest. And that's what I feel like AEW does a lot of, are spot fests. They go for the ooh and the ah and the holy shit chants and the fight forever chants. But
Here's my thing. I only like spot fests in like tag matches usually. Or if you're like coming up to that very last crescendo and you're trying to, one up each other on the way to the end. Those are the only time I like spot fests. But like I like in a tag match, it makes sense because, one person does their spot and then the next person overcomes them with their spot and it kind of like feels like it's building towards something and it makes a logical sense. There's the psychology to it. Whereas the way AEW and a lot of the indies do spots just to say, look what I can do. It feels like, I don't know who's old enough to remember Mad TV, but there was this one character and he was a grown man in his underwear and he would always be there with his mom and he'd be like, look what I can do. And he would just basically jump up and down in one spot. And like, but it was like, okay, that's nice. I can see what you can do. I expect you to be able to do something. You're a wrestler, but like, why are you doing it? One of the worst things that I have seen on WWE that reminded me of what I hate about some parts of the indies and AEW was that thing that happened between Carmella. No, was it Carmella? No. It was AJ Styles and Cody Rhodes at Backlash. When he did that one count kick out of one of the most protected moves in wrestling history, like the originator only did that move 7 times in his entire career, and you give it a one count, get out of my face. Immediately, get out of my face. I don't take you seriously anymore. I can't take you seriously. You could, like, if Roman had gotten that move, it would have been a 2.99, which is one of my favorite things about Roman. And his psychology, because he always gives you just that little glimpse of the possibility that he could lose and then kicks out. And it's so exciting and like it gets you on bated breath and on pins and needles. I do not like that cocky kick out of a like iconic move. That does not, that's stupid to me. And I psychology is so important, and when people forget that, that's when we have moments like that where look what I can do and look what I can kick out of. No, go away, go away.
No, I completely agree with you 110%. Because that's, one of the things that I don't like is, and another thing that I don't like, and I had this conversation with the guys from Ring of Bell Radio. We did a watch along a few months ago of the Women's War Games match from this past Survivor Series. I didn't like it at first. After the rewatch, I kind of walked that back a bit. What I don't like is the grouping of people when somebody is going to do a high flying move. Like when Io Sky was up on the top of the cell, at top of the cage, had the trash can over her head, and you see all the girls kind of just grouping up in the, in the ring, waiting full well for her to jump on them. Like, where's the psychology there? Because my initial thought process is if somebody's up on the top of the cage coming down with a trash can on her head, I'm moving the hell out of the way or trying to make her fall backwards out of the ring. That way the team will lose because it'll be, considered escaping the cage. So that, and then any other time where it's, 10 or 10 people kind of bunching up so somebody could do a moonsault off the top rope. That to me is something where it just it takes me out of it.
I think they've started to like hear that comment enough that they're making changes because I've seen more and more where they're actually trying to fight each other in a group, where you actually see people like at least doing their little rabbit punches and stuff like that. And you see them like glance to try and make sure that they catch this person, but also look like, oh no, you came out of nowhere. And so I appreciate that. Like, because I understand there's only so much that you can do because you have to be safe and you have to make sure you catch this person. But at the same time, they were getting a little too lax in all of that. And like the bent over for the kick thing, I hate it when they just stay there bent over waiting for whatever move it is to happen. I'm like, we can see you. We can see you seeing them.
Yeah.
What are you doing? You know, so I appreciate that they've actually made some efforts to like put some psychology back into it. Like hold your stomach and be bent over like with one hand on your knee and the other on your gut. Like, oh,
yeah.
Oh. And then like be moving into position while you're trying to get your breath back, quote unquote. You know, I'm with you. I'm like, don't take me out of it by losing the psychology of the match.
Yeah.
That's part of your art.
No.
And if you want other people to respect your art, you got to respect your art. So.
Exactly. Yep. All right. So I know we said that we were going to talk about the draft. We're already.
Sorry.
No. This conversation is fantastic because I like being able to have the conversation flow naturally. And you know, we did touch on the draft a little bit. And I guess what in listening to Eric Bischoff's podcast, I think it was the Wise Choices podcast that he did. They were coming up with ways on how to make the draft a little better. And because theoretically a draft, if you think about from, you know, legitimate pro sports, whether NFL, MLB, NBA, whatever, you're drafting from the lower tiers, whether it's college or independent, you know, semi-pro or whatever. So honestly, what I feel like needs to happen is they're going to do a draft. They have to do it where it's Raw and SmackDown choosing out of NXT. That way it's a legitimate draft. I do want to point out that somebody, again, I guess a couple people were questioning, you know, why NXT didn't have any picks or choices in the draft. I guess the word is, or the rumor is, they don't want to actually draft anybody to NXT because of the differences in the contracts. Because, you know, the Raw and SmackDown guys get a much higher rate of pay than the NXT guys. So if you're going to have someone drafted to NXT specifically, you know, it could cause problems with the contracts or whatever it is.
You're getting drafted into a pay cut.
Yes, exactly. Yes. So my thought is going forward. Now, again, it's not like the MLB or the NFL, because MLB, NFL, you know, NBA, whatever, you have guys retiring every year. You have roster spots, free agents that you have to fill up, which is why the drafts are there. So you can't guarantee that somebody's going to retire every year from the WWE, whether it be Raw or SmackDown. You know, yeah, there could be people that are, you know, going to be free agents and they're going to AEW, let's say. So that's another roster spot. What I feel they should do is anybody that's signed throughout the year, you know, until the next draft, let's say they're going to do the draft after WrestleMania every year. What they need to do is anybody that's signed, whether it's from the Indies, whether it's from AEW, whether it's a newcomer in general, they should have to, by default, start in NXT. That way, when it comes time for the draft, you have these open spots, and now it's a true draft because Raw and SmackDown are choosing from, you know, the guys that have been in NXT and the new guys that came in throughout the year. So you don't have a guy like, you know, Tonga Leo, who just came out on Backlash to join the Bloodline, coming right to SmackDown because he's going to be part of the Bloodline. Well, I mean, he came over from New Japan. He's brand new. He's never been, I mean, yes, I know he's been in the WWE before, but, you know, in this current persona. Same thing with Tama Tonga. You know, if you really want somebody that badly on your in your faction, whether it's the Bloodline or Judgment Day or whatever, show some scouting. You know, show some, you know, Paul Heyman going down to NXT saying, you guys are, you know, family of Haku, who's been big, you know, for the Samoan or Tongan legacy. And, you know, we want to bring you up to the Bloodline, or have Solo go down there and say, hey, I can't trust Jimmy anymore. Roman's off. I need backup. You know, let's see if you could fill the gap. Then you go to the draft, and that's how you draft them into that program.
I don't necessarily agree with that.
Okay.
Here's why.
Okay.
In the sense of one of the great things about WWE is its surprises, the unexpected thing. If you telegraph it by having someone like Solo or Paul Heyman going down and scouting people, there's no surprise now when they
Okay.
come up. The other problem is I like the draft. I don't like how it's handled. The scouting aspect is something that I want, but I want it for all wrestlers. I would love to just see one day Adam Pearce just show up at NXT and, you know, be having a conversation with someone. But I'd also like him to show up at SmackDown one day and just be talking to Jade about, you know, so what are you liking about SmackDown? You know, could you imagine yourself on Raw? Think about all of the time that you'd have, and you know, you would be biggest star on the show. You know, no, there's the competition that you'd have would be fresh for you. Like, I'd like to see them scouting like they did when they were doing those contract signings. I feel like if we had more of that leading up to the draft, then it would make it more exciting for people. Like you having those people where they're having the, you know, people on the on that row that are all on the phones and they're tapping in their little notepads and stuff like that. And you know, you've got all these different groups like that thing. If they're gonna make it a draft, make it feel like a draft for everybody, you know. And with NXT, they played into it. So it felt like a draft. And so when NXT stars got called, it felt more important.
It did. Yes, I agree.
But they didn't do the same thing on Raw and SmackDown. So it kind of lost a little bit of its luster. So I feel like if they treat it all like a draft instead of just treating NXT like a draft, then it would kind of get more exciting. And you'd be like, oh my gosh, are they going to pull them to Raw? Is that person going to Raw? What happened to their tag team? You know, like that kind of thing. You know, put out the scouts. You have a whole bunch of like backstage managers who are like former members of the Attitude Era. Could you imagine if Doug, you know, Bubba Ray Dudley, I don't know if he's still working backstage, or D-Von just randomly came up to Carmelo and was like, you know what, the draft's coming up and we've been looking at you and we think that you're fantastic and we think that you deserve a lot more opportunities than you've been getting. And I feel like, you know, we have draft number 7 in the first round. Well, how would you feel, you know, if we pulled you? You know, let, hey, you know, give me a call. We can set it up. I can email you a copy of what your contract could look like. You know, this could be a moment for you. I know you were, you know, you were in the first round last year. You'd be in the first round again this year, maybe a little higher, you know. Let's have it like make it feel like a draft for everyone. Because like you said, it we don't lose enough spots for it to only be NXT people. I mean, that's when you end up with the overcrowding issue, and then, you know, you over tax NXT, and it's like, okay, well, we don't have nearly enough people to fill the spaces that you just back, you know, emptied out for us. So we need to have some people to build the next round, you know. And they still need to be able to have moments where people surprisingly show up on the main roster, either from outside the company or from NXT, because that's one of their special things. Like, if that whole thing with Tama Tonga and Tongaloa, if GOD had not shown up the way they did, there's no way it would have felt as special. Like, if we knew that that was even a possibility that we would be getting Tama Tonga and Tongaloa, could it have been as special when we saw them?
Because the biggest rumor is Jacob Fatu. Each time
Yes.
that, you know, whether it was Tama Tonga or Tongaleo, everybody thought, oh, Jacob Fatu is coming in. And it turned out he's not there yet. So, I mean, the rumor is that he's signed. It's just a matter of when he's actually going to make his debut. And that's another thing that kind of takes you out of it is just the fact of, like you said before, smarky. The fact that we know too much, as fans, we know when somebody's signing. We know that their contract is leaving. Part of the draw of the Monday Night Wars, especially once, you know, the NWO started, there was very little internet. So nobody knew Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, their contracts had run out from WWE. And, you know, you get Hall on Memorial Day of, you know, 96. And then 2 weeks later, you get Kevin Nash. So nobody knew. Like, unless you were at that Madison Square Garden show that had the curtain call and everything, but still, nobody knew he was going over to WCW. Very few people. There was very little internet. And then each time somebody new would come out. When Hogan, you know, dropped the leg on Savage at Bash of the Beach 96, that was the shot heard around the world, you know, because nobody expected it. And, you know, there were no, there were no spoilers on Twitter or, you know, somebody coming out, hey, you know, I the you know, Hulk Hogan's in for a character change, and you know that he's going to join, you know, these two new guys, the Outsider, or you know, these two guys, the Outsiders, and because he's from WWE, and it's going to be like Vince sent them down. There's nothing there. Yeah, they had the dirt sheets. Yeah, they had the PW Insider, and you know, the Wrestling Observer, which is, you know, been there all along. But unless you were actually a paid subscriber to getting these magazines or newsletters, you were in the dark. You were watching it as a fan to be surprised.
And there was also the fact that because they would be coming out as articles in a magazine, you might not get it until after it was already done.
Right.
But the thing about it is, I think that WWE has been doing a better job of confusing the wrestling media on what's happening.
Exactly.
And I think other brands need to take notes and start doing that. Like AEW needs to be hiding their contracts better.
Yes.
It needs to be much more, you know, secret whose contract is ending and who's not. Because like with the Mercedes was the last one that was really exciting and shocking besides like CM Punk. I think the CM Punk arrival was shocking because we knew he was leaving AEW, but you know, it was one of those things where people were saying never would he come back to
Right.
WWE after the way they ended. But WWE is the king of never say never. So like they should have all known better. After Edge. Edge should have been the last shock
Right.
of
Yes.
any decade.
Exactly.
But the one thing that Mercedes did that was so brilliant was she, until she was ready to pack out an arena for the new show that she was on, she kept everyone guessing. Am
Yes.
I going to WWE? Am I going to go make an appearance on TNA now that Trinity's there? Am I going to go over to AEW? Am I going to go back to New Japan? Like, what am I going to do? Like, no one really knew. And she mocked anyone who pretended like they did. And when they were at signings and people would ask, and she's like, why would I tell you?
Right.
Like,
Yeah.
you're this, like, giving you the dirt is not going to help my situation. And so she really kept it mum. The higher ups kept it mum for the most part, with like a very little. Towards the end, someone did sneak start to, you know, spill it a little bit too much.
Well, it's
But
also,
like for
you
the
know, the
most
fact
part,
that
it was like really exciting to like, where will she end up? Where will she end up? And they like waited until right before they dropped the tickets for the Boston show to finally announce that she was officially All Elite. And that was perfect and brilliant because that meant it gave you enough time to get that place sold out so that when she made her appearance, it was in the most, you know, it was the best possible scenario for it. But, you know, then you also have situations like Tamatonga Loa. People didn't know he was signed. No one knew he was
nobody.
signed. Everyone thought Tamatonga came by himself and was going to be backed up by Jacob Fatu.
Yeah.
And instead, we got full GOD. And I'm just like, some of the little things that I do follow on the indies, like some of the people I follow who follow the indies, they were big GOD fans from when they were in New Japan and you know everywhere else. So like I had some familiarity with Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa beforehand, so that's why I keep saying GOD because in NWA and but in J New
And
Japan
sorry,
they were known as GOD.
yeah, the Gorilla's Destiny, yeah.
So,
You know, and
but
it's
I
like,
was like, keep some
Tangaloa,
secrets.
what was that?
But like the key to my whole story is keep some secrets.
Yes, have to. You absolutely have to. That's why there was so much. that worked back, back in the late 90s, early 2000s. Who nobody knew that X-Pac was showing up on Raw the night after WrestleMania 14. Nobody knew that because nobody knew that he'd been fired from WCW. Last we knew, he was, part of the NWO was six, and then all of a sudden he's coming out on Raw, and it's that shock value. There's very little shock value. And you're right, WWE has been doing a great job lately, whether it's Tama Tonga and Tongaloa, or even during the Royal Rumble, they've been very, very quiet about any surprises on the Royal Rumble. Jordynne Grace now, which was rumored, but even she tried to throw people off by posting pictures that she was elsewhere and everything, because when the characters buy into the surprise and they buy into the mystique, that's when you're gonna have something good. But when it's somebody who goes, oh yeah, I'm gonna be here, I'm not announced for it, it loses. You get lost, because what's the point of watching that?
Some of the greatest moments in WWE history came from Shock Factor. Another example from another soap, Jason's return announcement. Like, everybody had been speculating, is he still with Days? Did he re-sign? Did he not? I don't think he did. I think he's coming back to GH. We're almost positive he's coming back to GH. What if he's announced tonight on the special? Nah, they wouldn't do that because he's still showing us with Days. And then, like, I don't know if it was the morning of or the day before he announced that he's not with Days anymore. Like, oh my gosh, does that mean he's coming back to GH? Do you think he's gonna be on? Like, there was so much buzz and excitement, but no one knew anything until he actually came through the door. And like, that had so much buzz and excitement to it. And the soaps, they've gotten away from that a lot of times about keeping secrets, and they want to instead try to garner that buzz by just keeping everything out in the open. But GH's behind the scenes has also been working really hard to like throw people off. They've been throwing out false spoilers. They've been, really tight-lipped of late because they want the shifts and the changes from the new writing regime to hit fresh. And I feel like when the higher ups realize and remember that surprises is part of the package and part of the excitement for fans, that's usually when we get really great stuff.
You're absolutely right. And like your I lost my train of thought. Oh yeah, like your co-host for Petty Prattle, Angela, has said on this show, on Suds News before, is that they are throwing out, you're right, they're throwing out a lot of false rumors because they want to plug the leaks. They don't want the surprises to get out. They don't want the booking or the writing decisions to get out. Unfortunately, I think we live in a society, and this goes for both wrestling and soap operas. We live in a society now where everybody wants to know everything, thinks they know everything. And if they're kept in the dark for longer than, let's say, a week, they want things to change, and they feel like, their opinion is the only one that matters. And I've seen it with a lot of soap stuff and a lot of wrestling stuff. There are people, crapping on Triple H for certain things or whatever. And it's like, WWE has been hotter than ever under the Triple H regime. There's going to be a little bit of downtime now after WrestleMania. Seth Rollins is hurt. Rhea Ripley's hurt. Roman Reigns is taking time off. The Rock is taking time off. So yeah, you're down a number of these main eventers. So now it's time to build up the new ones. AJ Styles against Cody Rhodes, and the storyline behind that comes from outside of WWE, where they're both former leaders of Bullet Club.
Not
So
really.
what was that?
That's an exaggeration.
Okay, I don't follow the Bullet Club. I think they're a rip-off of the NWO, so I never really got into them. So I'm just going
AJ
based off of
Styles was a leader, but Cody was not.
that. Okay.
So
But
that was a bit of an exaggeration for story purposes, which I wasn't upset about. I know of some of my more smart friends about the end were like, Cody. Look, that's not my monkey, not my circus. Just play, just go along with the story, please. Like, they're trying to do something.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's they need time. They need time to build new stars. LA Knight is fantastic. I'm so glad that he's actually, finally getting his chance. I don't know why the hell when they brought him up to the main roster originally, they put that stupid Max Dupri gimmick on him. But then when he finally did, because he was over on NXT, but that was during the time where Vince, kind of wanted to sabotage a lot of Triple H's creations from NXT. And it sucked big time. We saw that with the original incarnation of Karrion Kross coming up from NXT, the main roster, where he was put in a demolition type gear and Scarlett was stripped away and everything that made Karrion Kross was stripped away. I'm
I
kind of
don't know
wondering.
if you want me to speak on those two performers because I'm going to have a very different opinion.
Okay.
A slightly messier opinion. So I'm
Okay.
not sure if you want my opinion on either of those two performers.
No,
But
go ahead.
yes, they did definitely change them a great deal at first. And that did have an impact on their momentum on the main roster. And that's was not smart work. And I feel like Vince had a habit of either wanting to destroy a creation of Triple H's or show him what he could have done with them. The example being
I think it goes back to
Bianca Belair for the other side of things, because Triple H liked to feed people to Bianca, like make her the gatekeeper for his shows, but he never wanted to push her as the top star. And Vince came in and said, "You're making a mistake. I'm going to show you why." And he was correct because she could have been a top star at any point in time in NXT, and they chose not to allow her to do that. And then Vince got her, and immediately, once he was on SmackDown, went absolutely crazy with it, like and made her the superstar that we know her to be now. So I'm just like, look, I have my fights with Triple H, but I also respect some of the things that he does, which one of my friends is probably, if he hears this, is going to like fight the air because I actually said that out loud in public. Triple H and I have like a long-standing feud. He knows nothing about it. It's fine. But like I do feel like they were playing petty games to some degree at one point.
Vince himself has always been petty when it came to creative decisions because he always wanted to keep things his way. So whenever like which is why when the NWO came in after he bought WCW and the NWO came in, it didn't work because he even 25 years later, the NWO is still one of the top merch sellers in the company. But it didn't work because it wasn't Vince's creation. It was a creation from WCW. Goldberg, this first run sucked because Vince didn't know how to use, he didn't know the formula that WCW used. He didn't want to use the formula because it was not his creation. So go, carry on with what you were saying, but it comes down to the same thing. Him being petty and just going back and forth with whomever, if it's not his creation, he didn't want to push it or he wanted to put his spin on it.
And provoke and prove he could do better.
Right.
Anything you can do, I can do better.
Yeah.
And that wasn't always the case
Right.
because he sometimes did not understand what worked for certain people. Now, what I'm also going to say in regards to all of this is I also feel like sometimes when he does this, it shows the weakness in a performer.
Yes.
So some performers were not nearly as strong or great or whatever as previously assumed under really solid, great booking. Like, you can put someone under great booking and they shine and they shine, and then you can put them under bad booking and it shows all of their weaknesses, or they shine anyway.
Yeah.
And I feel like some performers did one thing and some performers did other. And it's kind of separates the wheat from the chaff to some degree for me. And so I feel like some of them got screwed over simply unfairly. And then some of them got screwed over and it showed just how underwhelming they could be if not given the proper booking to protect them.
Makes sense. Absolutely. Well, it's,
I feel like he did that to Shayna Baszler.
Yep.
One thing I'm going to give Shayna, I dragged her at one point, like right in her mentions, and I kind of had it back and forth. But I've also given her props since then. She's shown that she's capable of growth.
Yes.
That if they give her actual something to work with, that she can put in work and do great work. We've always known she was a good, solid wrestler. But sometimes her weakness was her character stuff. And, you know, with the Nia team up and things like that, we've gotten to see that she can do good character work and she can be interesting and solid and things like that. And she doesn't necessarily need the best booking in the world. She just kind of needs, you know, some good direction and room to play.
Yeah.
So, you know, but they also showed her weaknesses by when they brought her up with that weird vampire thing, vampire, non-vampire thing, like completely wrecking everything we kind of knew of her before. And I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
But it also, you know, showed where she was weakest, which is in the character work and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really, really petty. And I felt bad for her, but I was really proud of what she was able to accomplish after that. I do also think, though, that there are certain people who were not great, still aren't great, and they weren't great when people were hyping them. They're not great now when people are hyping them, but some people like it, and it takes all kinds.
Mm-hmm.
So I try, when I'm on other people's podcasts, not to take too many shots.
Yeah.
Unless the gateway gets opened and they come after one of my faves, then it's all free for all.
Well, we'll have to save the shots for another time. We've been at this for an hour and 20 minutes. I know it's getting late for, you know, especially on the East Coast for people. But before we go, we'll definitely have to get together with this again. You are going to be a presenter for the 2024 Sudsy Awards. Welcome to the Sudsy family.
Thank you.
Let everybody out there know where they can find you on socials, on social media.
On the Twitter machine, I am only the number one Tony D. I am the petty sports entertainer. I also write for pettyprattle.com. Mm-hmm. We have a podcast. Mostly we do soap review recaps and reviews. But I have at least one podcast where we went over WrestleMania with a friend of mine named Calvin. And I will probably do some of the big fours until I can kind of get a head of steam and start like maybe doing a few more. So I may make a few more appearances with you before we get to that point and that kind of thing. But yeah, I'm mostly on Twitter because I'm a mouse. So I've got stuff to say.
Okay.
And from there, I will guide you anywhere else you want to go. But if you're interested in our new soap news site, we have pettyprattle.com. And, you know, we are working on building it up. So it is a process.
Yeah.
We appreciate anyone who wants to support us. We also have believe we set up a Patreon. Yes. Patreon.com/pettyprattle podcast.
Okay.
So when we are all set up and ready to go fully, that is where you can get all your goodies and that kind of thing.
Fantastic. Well, Tony, it's been great talking about wrestling. It's nice to have someone to talk about wrestling with. One of the reasons why the Squared Circle News is, you know, basically a special is because the lack of a consistent co-host. So, you know, when it comes to something, and, you know, whether it's you coming on every week or, you know, me can find another, because I know I have spoken to Flobo Boyce, who will also be a presenter at the Sudsies. He and I are going to be doing episode like this coming up in the near future. As well as, you know, as well as some other people, as, you know, until I find that consistent co-host, so Squared Circle News will be either pre-recorded or will be, you know, it'll be inconsistent, I should say. But until then, you know, Tony, it's been great having you on. Thank you so much. We will definitely do this again and, you know, talk more about, you know, wrestling and current stuff and past stuff and just everything.
Well, it was absolutely a pleasure, Vinny. I had a blast. Thank you for letting me run my mouth and waste an hour and 20 minutes of your time. No, I'm kidding. Sorry we didn't get to talk more about the draft, but I feel like we hit a lot of important points about what's been going on in wrestling lately. So I feel like we got a lot in there anyway. So I'm so glad I got to talk with you about it.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. And again, for those of you who are watching, go ahead, hit that like button, hit subscribe, get notified. If you're listening on the podcast, we'd give us that 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. Don't forget, go to sudsandsquirtcircle.com. That's where you can find everything about Suds News, Dockside at the Bay, Squirt Circle News, anything else. And again, we are an official affiliate of WWE Shop, which is a Fanatics experience. Go over to sudsandsquirtcircle.com/wrestlingmerch. The affiliate link is right in that coding, and we'll get a commission off of it. We do have both Buy Me a Coffee and Patreon as well. Both of those are their specific domains /sudsandsquirtcircle. You know, help us out. Maybe get me over to Las Vegas next year for WrestleMania. Who knows? But either way, Tony, it's been great. For Tony, I'm Vinny. And I will be back with you next Monday for Suds News. Other than that, have a great week, everybody.
Bye.
All right.